Welcome back into the Godly Young Men Podcast, episode 143. As always, we thank you for joining us. Like, rate, review, subscribe, as they say. It really does help us out. If you like our videos, comment on them, and subscribe, whether it be on YouTube or on Apple Podcasts, and give us a rating, leave us a review. Every little bit helps. We really appreciate it. But we are excited to get into the episode today, Joe. We are getting ever closer to episode 150, which is just crazy that we're about to finish year three of the Godly Young Men Podcast. Yeah, 2023 was the year we started, January. So we're about to finish year three. We appreciate you being along for the ride, or along on the ride with us. And yeah, let's get into it, Joe. So we're talking about really something that is kind of a straight up Godly Young Men Podcast alley. That is, we have talked so much throughout this podcast in the last 3 years about striving for greatness, about saying the hard things, having a backbone,
setting high standards,
maintaining those high standards. And so, I mean, Joe and I are always looking for a good excuse to talk about those types of things. Yeah. And the Secretary of War, I guess previously Secretary of Defense, Secretary of War, Pete Hegseth, gave us the exact outlet to be able to talk about that. I know not all of our listeners, maybe not most of our listeners, are into politics or pay attention to much of that. But the Secretary of War, Pete Hegseth, delivered an address on September the 30th, so a couple weeks ago now, to America's senior military leaders. And it's about 45 minutes long. I would encourage everybody who is listening to this to go listen to that speech. Qualifier, I think there are three curse words in it. So, of course, not a full endorsement. It was those notwithstanding, it was an excellent speech. Like, just absolutely incredible. We're going to be talking about, and again, this episode is not an endorsement of everything Pete Hegseth has ever done or said, but we're going to focus on some of the things he said in that speech, some of the themes he hit on, some of the concepts he broached, because man, does it ever apply to the Godly Young Men Podcast and just what it takes to be a godly young man. Yep. Really, just to give you a gist of the speech, and then Joe, I'll turn it over to you for any introductory thoughts. He announced the return of the War Department as opposed to the Department of Defense. He wanted to break away from kind of the bureaucratic defensive thinking that has been overtaking that department. His speech called for a culture of readiness, accountability, and victory, as opposed to just kind of political red tape, essentially. He was speaking directly to generals and admirals, and he basically said, we got to get back to being good at our jobs, fit and in shape, and not lowering standards, and rebuilding combat credibility was essentially what he was talking about. It was a great speech, I got to say, again. And so, Joe, I don't know if you got to watch the whole thing. I'm sure you've read a lot about it up to this point. Any introductory thoughts, and kind of really get into why we're even covering this? Neither one of us are super into politics, as far as like just reading every single thing about it. And I know not a lot of our listeners are either, but initial thoughts, and then why are we covering this?
Yeah, we're also, obviously, we're not part of the armed forces of the military. We are very appreciative of those that are, but this is a masterclass toward anybody that is going to lead. Even his presence is, you know, as he gets up there, you can just feel there's such presence as he gets there.
Such authority.
Such authority that he brings, where it's not, hey guys, how about we try a little harder, guys? Like, nobody's taking that seriously. Pete Hegseth gets up there. He delivers just a rousing speech, just from a speaker standpoint.
Rhetorical standpoint.
Yeah, just as a, you know, from a homiletics, even as we think about preachers. It was just a masterclass in getting up there, speaking your truth, being very, I don't even know if forceful is right. Powerful is really the word. Just powerful as he starts to give this. And so, great speech. I said, you know, I think this is something we were talking about a couple weeks back at this point. But seeing some of those clips come out was just like, we're back, you know. And you see a lot of this in the current administration. And there's just multiple of those moments of, we're back. We're finally, like, kind of the dad's home thing. We're taking ourselves seriously. We're finally getting back to a military that is willing to do what a military is supposed to do, and that we're getting the woke ideology out and everything else. And what a great way to do it, to get up and to have this speech that, yes, it's toward the generals, yes, it's toward the admirals and you know, the military leaders, but it's really to the entire military of, we're going to be better. We're striving for greatness, for you know, lack of a better phrase, we're striving for greatness is the whole point of it. It was really, really powerful. So once again, as Will said, go look it up. Go look up some clips. There's some clips for sure that are going around just about some of the things we're going to get into. But you know, why we're covering this, though we're not military, though we're not necessarily into politics, is just, as you said, it's straight up Godly Young Men, you know, gym content material. It is right in our
wheelhouse,
breadbasket, whatever you want to say, for us to say, this was a perfect way, a powerful way, to call people to a higher standard, knowing it's not going to go over well. And it really hasn't with a lot of people. You can't say those things, and you're trying to get women out of the military and all this stuff. And funny enough, he had been on a podcast previously before he became Secretary of War, I suppose, talking about not wanting women in military. He didn't say that in there, but he raised the standards as such. It's going to be very difficult for women to maintain or to be in the military with some of those things.
If they can't hit it, then so be it.
If they can't hit it. And yeah, it's just kind of like tough rocks, man. So be it. That it is what it is. I think that's the phrase used. It is what it is. So he didn't come up with size standards. So there's a lot of different things as we get into it that I think were relevant for us, and some specific things. You put a great outline together on some of the truths that I think we need to really be kind of sinking our teeth into.
Well, the last thing I put on the outline as far as why we're covering it is because, to me, the speech and him presenting it represented the method and the manner in which men today need to stand up and speak the truth.
Right.
As you said when you started talking, he wasn't mousy. He wasn't trying to be Mr. Rah-Rah guy. He didn't crack jokes, talk about how funny he was. Like, he was direct. He assumed authority.
Yep.
He said what he wanted and needed to say. He spoke true. Like, again, he was just so direct. Like, I walked away from that speech going, wow, I know exactly where he stands. And so, to me, I just walked away from that speech. I was listening to it on the car, and I was like, we need more church leaders that will lead like that.
Right. Imagine that in your pulpit every Sunday.
Yeah, exactly. We need more men, husbands, and fathers that will say those types of things. Again, not apologize for, you know, or not bow down to obviously the woke mob or to, you know, the politically correct, not offending people. Like, he was like, we're done with that. We're not doing that anymore. And so, again, it represented to me the method and manner in which men need to stand up and speak the truth. So let's get into, Joe, there's four kind of different areas that we put on the outline that essentially I think apply to us in everyday life. Again, as Joe spoke to, we're not military. This is not a military episode by any means, but he hit some highlights in his speech that I think absolutely apply to godly young men and fall right in with what we discuss just about every week on this podcast. And so the first one that we have on here, kind of the first point, is he really hit at the need for confrontation if peace and if truth are at stake. The need for confrontation.
It's necessary.
And he talks about, in the start of the speech, changing the name from the War Department to the Department of Defense. Or, I'm sorry, back, vice versa, changing it from the Department of Defense to the War Department. He made the point that, other than the Gulf War, since it was changed to the Department of Defense, the United States has not won a war. Like, just completely over again, other than the Gulf War. But a quote that I put on here, he says, as history teaches us, the only people who actually deserve peace are those who are willing to wage war to defend it. That's why pacifism is so naive and dangerous. It ignores human nature and ignores human history. Either you protect your people and your sovereignty, or you will be subservient to something or someone. It's a truth as old as time. We've got to be willing to deal with controversy.
Right.
Maybe not seek it out in confrontation, I should say. Maybe not seek it out, not go around looking for it. But, I mean, the point he was making applying to the military that we can apply to us is, man, if truth is at stake, if peace is at stake, that's going to come after confrontation most of the time.
Right. The question you have to ask yourself, what is right? Not what's everybody think about it, what's going to get me liked, what's going to go over well, yeah, what's going to keep me out of the doghouse. What is right? And in a crazy, crazy world, in the crazy times that we live in, where you got dudes dressing up as women, vice versa, you got people with furries, you know, claiming to be dogs and things like, I mean, you got some crazy stuff out there. The need for confrontation right now is very real. Because in a perfect world, supposedly, we wouldn't really need a whole lot of confrontation because everything's going super well. We live in a whacked out society that is just crazy, and it's pushing woke ideology, and it's pushing LGBTQ agenda, it's pushing abortion, it's pushing all sorts of stuff. We need guys that are going to stand up exactly as he did, boldly, confidently, with this air of respect, you know, like you could tell he respects himself, and he's going to demand respect, and to say the difficult things and be willing to wade into the controversial and to have that confrontation. And that's exactly what he's talking about. I mean, I think that's exactly what he's saying. That's why pacifism is so naive and dangerous. It ignores human nature and it ignores human history. Things get bad. It's kind of entropy, the second law of thermodynamics. Like, things are going to get worse. They deteriorate. You're going to need something that's going to help with the regeneration, which I think obviously is the gospel. But that means you're going to have strong men standing up, being willing to have the confrontations. Well, where does that take place? First and foremost, in your home. It's going to have to take place with your wife instead of, well, you know, again, the doghouse thinking, or she's not going to have sex with me, or, you know, she's going to be really mad at me, or whatever it may be. Those are some things to think about. What's the right thing to do? What is the right thing to do? And are you willing to, engage in that confrontation if the truth of what is right is at stake and ultimate peace is at stake. You may have cheap peace in the time. And this is what so many guys go for, is that that fake cheap peace that's like, oh, man, thank goodness, stayed out of the doghouse. I'm not sleeping on the couch tonight. Yeah, we push the confrontation down the road. What usually happens is it builds and builds and builds and builds and builds until it's a mound this big, and the confrontation a lot of times breaks people up and it heads toward divorce. Rather than just having the confrontation when it was down here, and you're so busy seeking cheap peace that you're not seeking long-term peace, and the confrontation is what would have brought you there.
That's what I was going to say, is people mistakenly think that peace means avoiding confrontation.
Right.
That if, so apply it to your wife. Man, if I want to keep the peace with her, I just need to kind of avoid confrontation, not, you know, disagree, just kind of bow down, roll out the red carpet for her, essentially. That's a misunderstanding. That's not peace. What that is essentially almost a subtle dictatorship is kind of what it turns into.
Yeah, absolutely.
What real peace, ultimately, the way that real peace is brought about is it might be you have some tough conversations with your wife, and maybe, you know, that's not to say that the husband's always in the right. Maybe she needs to put you in your place sometimes, but, you know, other times maybe you need to tell her, look, we're not going to do that in this household. You can't treat me like that. You can't treat the kids like that. Whatever it may be, you can't do this XYZ. You got to stand up to her. You got to deal with some confrontation. Ultimately, when that's settled, that's when peace comes about. Peace is not, again, let me just avoid all confrontation and whatever she says goes. And same thing, let's take it to the kids. So you got teenage kids. You really think peace in your house is going to be just let the kids do whatever they want to do and kind of, again, let them walk all over you because you want to keep the peace? No, keeping the peace or making your house a peaceful place is for you to send up your kids and say, you won't be doing that. We don't do that in this household. You're not allowed to do that. And don't cross me, essentially. Like, you're going to get in trouble if that happens. That leads to a peaceful house, but versus, again, just avoiding confrontation altogether, the pacifist parent, pacifist husband approach.
And you also see it in the church, people that are keeping the peace. Yes, we're called to be peacemakers. I realize that. You go to the Beatitudes, things like that. Peace is a really good thing, but our point is not that we shouldn't be peacemakers as much as it should
it's
be.
It's the way we go about achieving
it. Correct. Peace. It's the way we go about getting there. And just letting, most of the time, it's kind of letting, and maybe not in the situation with your wife and kids, but like letting the bad people win, letting the bad guys win because, well, hey, at least we're not having to fight and at least that's what's best. And we've convinced a lot of people in the church, I think, a lot of Christians, that this fight is, if you go to fight with anybody or if there's any confrontation with anybody, well, that's just not Christian. That's not the way of the cross. And so we really need to just basically suck it up and take it and swallow your pride, because it'd be really prideful for us to get in any confrontation. Like, somebody needs to tell Paul, swallow his pride, because he got into a lot of confrontations. He was willing to call out and challenge Peter. He was willing to say difficult things against Hymenaeus and Alexander and warn against them. And I mean, Paul took some pretty serious tones and had some confrontational, just a confrontational tone in some of these situations. Look at the entire letter to the Galatians. The whole thing is nothing but controversy. It's confrontational. It's going in
Jesus
and going
as well.
Yeah, exactly. Jesus did the same thing. So you look at John, the seven letters to the churches in Asia, like, pretty tough words in there. There's some confrontational things, but the peace was being lost. They think they're keeping peace because, and this goes to the one in, and I'm not off the top of my head, is it Smyrna? One of those where they're taking Jezebel in, right? And they're not really standing
Thyatira?
Up. It may have been Thyatira. Maybe it's Thyatira.
I could be wrong.
They're not standing up to Jezebel, the Jezebel, whatever it is, in their midst, and they think they're keeping peace. Same thing in 1 Corinthians 5. We're not calling out. We're at peace, right? We're at peace with the guy that's sleeping with his father's wife. And what does Paul say in 1 Corinthians 5? What are you doing? Call this guy out. You've got to get him out of your midst. That has no part here. The Gentiles don't even do those things. The people in the world don't even do that. And you're letting this guy in, and you think you're keeping the peace. You think it's more loving. So Paul is illustrating this point perfectly. Sometimes you need confrontation for the truth, to preserve truth and to preserve ultimate peace, and that's what he has in 2 Corinthians.
Yeah.
They have gone so far, he's like, hey, guys, let him back in. Like, you did what you're supposed to. You got the guy out so as to church discipline him and get him back. Now it's time to get him back in. That's where peace is made, is you took the stand, you had the confrontation, and then the guy comes around from a sin. It's going to happen with your wife. It's going to happen with your kids. It's going to happen in the church. It's going to happen even in work.
Yeah.
Be willing as a godly young man to engage in confrontation. As you said, don't seek it out. It's not like, you know, we want to be the jerks that are always rabble-rousing type of thing. We're not looking for that. Be willing to stand up in pursuit of peace, in pursuit of truth, true peace, not just the fake peace at the front. And I think Hegseth said that very, very well.
Yeah. I mean, and Jesus, again, like, by the way, what's Thyatira?
Man, nice.
Like that
nice,
one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, even Jesus, again, didn't he even say, like, I did not come to bring peace but a sword?
Yep.
Like, there's going to be division. There's going to be, because the things that, what Jesus stands for is just, it's polarizing, you know, like especially back then. So, yeah, we kind of beat this one to death. I'm going to relate it to point number two, which is tied to it. And again, these weren't – he didn't, like, go through these points, but these are the points I took out of it. These were definitely themes within the speech. The second one is why culture is so important. Why culture is so important. The quote that I took from him, he said, because no plan, no program, no reform, no formation will ultimately succeed unless we have the right people and the right culture at the War Department. He says, if I've learned one core lesson in my 8 months in this job, it's that personnel is policy. And he goes on to say later on, we're ending the war on warriors. I love that quote.
Yeah.
I thought that was really good.
What a great quote.
Ending the war on warriors, personnel is policy. Some more of the context is he was kind of going off on like what the Department of Defense had turned into. He called it the woke department. They were pushing DEI. Everything was gender-based or race-based as far as promotions go, like promoting someone based on their skin color, their gender. He used the phrase dudes in dresses, like really took a blowtorch to it. But his point is like, listen, the Department of Defense, this category, this organization, or as a part of the government, was a disaster. It was a catastrophe.
Oh, yeah.
The point was, it's because of culture. The culture had deteriorated to the point where this stuff was being allowed, and that's why he says, like, personnel is policy. What you allow, and I think I've used this on the podcast before, this is not original to me by any means. Actually, my boss, who does I love working for him, he might not be original to him either, but if it is, it's really cool. Basically, he said, culture is the intersection of what you allow and what you expect. What you expect and what you allow. Where that intersects is what your culture is. You can say you expect this, but if you allow this, the intersection of that is where your culture is. So I've always loved the way that he's described that, and I would agree, and once again, to not to just use the same application points again, but in your home, in your family, in the church, in relationships, at work, whatever it is, you can have expectations, but what you expect versus what you allow, where those two things intersect is the culture. And again, Hegseth's point was, this department is in shambles right now because of the way that the culture has deteriorated. My job is to build up that culture once again. Once again, for us as godly young men, we need to be constant culture evaluators.
Yep.
We need to constantly be taking inventory, doing a diagnosis, whatever word you want to use, evaluation of the culture around us, in our family, in the church. How is the culture? What is the culture of my family? What is the culture of my home? What is the culture of the church? How am I contributing to that culture? And again, for good or for bad, is our culture one of lazy people who don't like to work? Is our culture one of people who don't ever, you know, have any time for God? Is our culture one of people who complain? Like, your culture can be anything. It's, again, what you expect versus what you allow. The men need to be, the husbands and the fathers need to be the culture evaluators. Constant diagnosis, yep. Constant, again, inventory of, like, what is the culture and how can we improve that? I love this point that he made talking about culture.
Yeah, you're going to be the culture evaluator and the culture setter. And yeah. You may look at it and you see so many guys that, oh, my wife just won't listen to me. She doesn't respect me. Well, what are you going to do with the kids? You know, it's just so difficult these days. Like, well, you're setting a culture in that too.
Yep.
You think that you are the guy that, well, I don't set the culture in my home. No, that is the culture in your home. And you already said
you've allowed that to be.
You've allowed it to be the case, and that is the culture. So whether you want to or not, we can try to punt, we can try to kick this one away and you know, well, it's my wife or it's somebody else or you know, it's media and we just allow our kids on social media all the time, whatever it is, like you are the one setting that culture. So yes, we have a huge responsibility as men leading our families to this exact point of you know, you could easily put this in the family because no plan, no program, no reform, no formation will ultimately succeed unless we have the right people and the right culture at the Wilkie family, the Harrod family, whatever family yours may be. Like you can insert that instead of War Department. Do you have a program? Do you have reform? Do you have a plan as to what you're trying to do? We're the ones that ought to have a plan. Yeah. As you know, we need to be the ones that are thinking about what does my family need the most? And that is to your point of, we got to be evaluating consistently what is the greatest need of the moment. And if you can't answer, if I were to sit down across the table from you and go, what's your family's greatest need right now? Could you answer it? Could you answer it? Could you tell me
and
this is it and this is the plan to get there?
And if you're living at home 14, 15, 16 years old, what is your greatest need right
Correct.
Now? Could you answer that?
Correct.
Yeah.
And you may even have a pulse on your own family, not that it's yours to fix, but you know, you may have it on your own family at that point. But what's your greatest need? As a godly young man, maybe you don't have your own family, what's your greatest need? But you also need to be thinking about that as you grow, which is, okay, in a decade from now, you're going to have a wife and kids, Lord willing. What's their greatest need? Are you aware of that? And you have an opportunity now. Let's say you're 15. You have an opportunity now to decide, what kind of culture do I want to set?
Yep.
What are the key things in it that I want to put into my family, which is going to be maybe hardworking, or we're going to be people of the word, or we're going to be prayer warriors, or we're going to be, we're going to be consistent. We're going to be loyal. We're going to be those that, like, what is it that matters to you? What culture are you going to set? So I think this is just a great point number two. Point number three.
I'm so excited about this one.
Yeah, point number three. An unwavering standard that we don't lower for anyone. An unwavering standard that we don't lower for anyone.
This was my favorite part of the speech.
He's got it. Man, this is, the whole speech great, but would you want him serving with fat or unfit or undertrained troops or alongside people who can't meet basic standards, or in a unit where standards were lowered so certain types of troops can make it in, or in a unit where leaders were promoted for reasons other than merit, performance, and war fighting? So would you want to be in any of those units where, as he says,
fat or unfit or undertrained?
Lowers of certain types of troops can make it in. A unit where leaders are promoted for reasons other than merit, performance. Do you want to be in that? Then he says,
I love this one.
He says, standards must be uniform, gender neutral, and high. If not, they're not standards. They're just suggestions. Uniform, gender neutral, and high.
If they're not uniform, gender neutral, and high, they're not standards. They're suggestions.
They're just suggestions. Man, this nails it. It's so much of what our podcast we talked about. This is just, again, in our wheelhouse right here. The standard cannot drop. And unfortunately, as you've seen in the military, the standard is, that's what I was looking up on my phone. I'm trying to remember the transgender one that was Secretary of, was it Health? One of the secretaries that was transgender in Biden's, Rachel Levine, I think is the name.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you're just looking at this situation going, what are we doing? Where is the... We have dropped the standards so much across the board.
Assistant Secretary for the Health, United States Department of Health and Human Services.
There you go. Rachel Levine, it's a dude. These are the standards that we've allowed, that this person is one of the top leaders, was for 4 years one of the top leaders in the United States. And, yeah, we need to return, get rid of the woke. We need to return back to, yes, there's standards, and sorry if a woman can't hit it, and sorry if that dude can't hit it. Why would we, like, we want everybody to feel good. And this is the participation trophy, and we've gone off on that before.
And he went off on that as well. Like, he said basically the era of protecting people's feelings is over.
Right. We're just, man, well, they're going to feel really sad if they can't. They've had a lifelong dream to serve in the military. Can they not lift this much weight? Can they not do this, you know, this physical exercise? Can they not show up in this way? Then no, I'm sorry. Your dream is over. And
he said,
wow,
it's time
so
to
mean.
Either find another position or another profession. That's what he said.
I mean,
love it.
Yeah. And it's just, is what it is. To his point, it is what it is. You don't have to like it. You do have to abide by it. And this is the same. Like, this is why our culture is godless in so many ways. Is that not what the Bible is? This is what it says. Yeah. Well, if I look at it from this direction, or how could you, don't you just don't know their story. You don't know why, you know, maybe they're really good people. I know that they sleep around before marriage, or I know that they're homosexual, but they're really good people. The standard is the standard, man. It's not changing for anybody. It hasn't changed in 2,000 years since Jesus was here, and since the Bible is complete. Like, the standard has not changed. And it hasn't changed for 6,000 years, going all the way back. So this idea that we can just kind of have this wavering standard and up and down, and depending on what we want, we're trying not to hurt people. What happens is, I don't want to hurt your feelings, but by you changing it hurts my feelings. Okay, well then let's try to fix their feelings, and then that's going to hurt somebody else. And so what you end up doing is having zero standard.
Yep.
Because the standard at some point is going to hurt somebody's feelings, and that's what we see in Scripture, which is why postmodernism, well, your truth and my truth and everybody else's truth, is that was the way to preserve everyone's feelings, and why, going back to our first point about confrontation, why so many people have backed away from confrontation, is the moment that you put forth a standard, there will be confrontation. I mean, we don't lower that for anybody, especially for ourselves.
Yeah, I've got so many thoughts on this. Obviously, Joe, you said it all very well, so I don't need to go much longer. But yeah, I mean, Hexa's point in the speech was, we've got to improve the performance of our unit, of our organization, and we're never going to get there by lowering the standard. So we're going to keep the standard high. That way, the performance is high. And that's me paraphrasing my words, not his. Man, do we ever need that in the church? You know, he went on to say, I don't remember if it was in this section or not, but basically talking about, you know, the facial hair rules, stuff like that. He's like, you're not civilians. You don't get to act like civilians. I think he used the phrase set apart.
Yeah.
That's exactly what, you know, us as Christians, you're not of the world. Sorry. Like, you don't get to dress like the world. You don't get to act like the world, talk like them, watch the same things that they watch, listen to the same things. Again, use the same words, do the same thing, sexual things. Like, You're not. You're supposed to be set apart. And so that's where that standard comes in. And man, in the church, we lower the standard, or either that, or we just pretend like there isn't a standard on stuff like modesty and that kind of thing. Man, if there's any takeaway you take away from either the speech or this podcast, have a standard and don't lower it for anybody.
Right.
Because the Bible certainly does, as Joe said. God certainly has a standard, and he's not about to lower it just because, again, to protect somebody's feelings or whatever. Like, God has a standard. But man, again, to go back to the same application points, in your home, don't lower the standard for your family, for yourself. Don't you know, I think of your dad's quote, right? Everybody's looking for a good excuse. Don't give yourself excuses. Don't give anybody excuses. Now, are we saying don't show grace? Of course not. God shows grace. But there's still a standard of living, a standard of salvation that must be met. We don't lower that standard.
And the standard shows that you care.
Yes.
What you get out of this is that, hey, Seth truly cares about the United States military. And when there's no standard, like, everybody, you know, it feels very loving. It feels very warm and welcoming and everything else. No, it's very much what the Bible talks about of, like, a husband who loves his children will discipline his children. You go to Hebrews 13 and such. That is love. God disciplines us because he loves us. And the standard is that exact thing played out of, like, this goes to show we care. And what a, I don't know, there's just a boost to that. Like, we have been set apart. We are better than this. We can do more, you know, and not better in terms of prideful. But, yeah, you're going to be in a different strata than your friend who's you know, into drugs and everything else. Like, as we want to continue to move that up, and yeah, we want him to do the same, but you got to let yourself be set apart, and you got to embrace that, and you've got to endorse it, and you've got to be proud of it, and you got to be accepting of it, and be okay with the fact that, no, we're not going to be the average. I think that's a beautiful thing that us guys can look at and go, I'm not going to be average. I'm not going to be the guy that, well, you know, again, it is what it is. I guess this is just the best it's going to get.
Mediocre.
Like, you're right, mediocre, making the excuses, things like that. I don't know. We could go off on this one for hours, and we have, and that's what most podcasts are about. But truly, it was inspiring to see somebody else say it in such a good way, such a profound way from Hegseth, of having the standard, keeping the standard, and seeing that care come across. Like, man, he genuinely cares about it. We care about our families. That's why we set the standard.
And that's the point he makes. He says, this is a life and death thing. This is the life and death of ourselves and our children, our sons and our daughters. I want them to live, so that's why I care, is essentially his point. Again, paraphrasing there. Spiritually, this should be the exact same application. I want my kids to live spiritually. I better keep my standard high, right? Let's get to the last one, Joe. We're going a little long here. I'll spend less time on this one. But the fourth kind of thing that I took away, fourth observation right from his speech, is that it was a complete rejection of the myth of toxic leadership. I've got a long quote I'll read here in a second, so bear with me. It's just such a good quote. I didn't want to trim it because it's just so good. But obviously, toxic is kind of a buzzword. It's a therapy buzzword, you know, in society now. But toxic masculinity, of course, was very big a few years ago. But that idea of toxic leadership, right? The over-demanding leader, maybe the harsh leader, whatever. It's toxic. Hegseth said, on the topic of standards, allow me a few words to talk about toxic leaders. Upholding and demanding high standards is not toxic. Enforcing high standards is not toxic leadership. Leading warfighters toward the goals of high, gender-neutral, and uncompromising standards in order to forge a cohesive, formidable, and lethal Department of War is not toxic. It is our duty, consistent with our constitutional oath. Real toxic leadership is endangering subordinates with low standards. Real toxic leadership is promoting people based on immutable characteristics or quotas instead of based on merit. Real toxic leadership is promoting destructive ideologies that are an anathema to the Constitution and the laws of nature and nature's God, as Thomas Jefferson wrote in the Declaration of Independence. Inject that into my veins. Like, that is perfect.
So good.
Because, again, feminism and society as a whole has drilled into us that the people who keep the standards high and fight for the standards high, those are the toxic ones.
Right.
Those are the abusive ones. Those are the fill in whatever therapy buzzword you want to throw in there.
Because people don't feel good.
Right, because it hurts people's feelings, right? And Hegseth is spot on. Enforcing high standards is not toxic. What is toxic, and Joe just kind of hit on this in the last point, is lowering the standard or eliminating the standard altogether. That is what's toxic. And so, again, we could go off on this for a while, but the application that I would say is, don't buy into the world's definition of what a toxic leader is. Because the world will tell you, once again, it's the leader that has the high standards, the leader that pushes for things, it's the leader that might push you harder than you want to be pushed. That's not toxic. That's what a true leader is.
Right, and I was going to read that part one more time. Real toxic leadership is endangering subordinates with low standards. It is dangerous to drop the standards through the floor Because, yes, especially military, it's life or death. It is. If you got the guy in the foxhole next to you who's wet in their pants and has no idea what they're doing or is not able to lift you out of there because, oh, well, sorry, we dropped the standards, whatever it may be, it's life or death situations, and that is what's toxic, is thinking that's okay. And the key to this is he's using their terminology and he's turning it around on them. And this is kind of what we did in our evolution, one of, like, they act like, oh, you stupid Christians that, you know, actually believe in seven-day creation, like, no, I think
we're
we can
the
turn
stupid ones here.
Right. I think we can turn it around, and I'm going to take the same tone. How stupid could you be to believe that, you know, in these things? Yeah, he turns it around. Like, you want to call me toxic for this? What's really toxic is exactly what you're doing. He's using the kind of weaponizing their own terms that they love to weaponize against us, and just calling it out of, like, you're going to get people killed.
Yeah.
And you may not like me for that. You may think that I'm a jerk. You may think a lot of things. You're going to get people killed, and you're an idiot. And sometimes it's important to kind of have that mindset of, like, I'm this right. Like, I am absolutely right in this, and I know what I'm doing. And to have that confidence to go out there, and especially in the culture, I'm not talking about with your wife or kids or things like that, especially in this culture, to know I'm standing on God's truth. I'm standing on what's right. I'm standing on what's moral and grounded and everything else. Be willing to go out and say it exactly like this. Real toxic leadership is endangering subordinates, low standards, using those terms against them. And once again, to your point, like, you think about with the family and whatnot, when we've lowered our standards, we've lowered the standards for even divorce, like, it's no fault divorce now, and we've lowered the standards for what kids can do, and we've lowered the standards when it comes to social media use, and when it comes to, you know, the age that you used to have specific age, and kids just get around that all the time, and it used to be like, man, I was lucky to get an hour of TV
screen
and video
time,
game screen time throughout the day. Now kids are on there for like 8 hours a day. I mean, it's just insane. We've lowered the standards, lowered the standards, lowered the standards. Look at the cost. Look at society around you and realize that this started when dad either left the home or when dad sat back and basically let any standard go. Well, if my kid wants to play Fortnite for 6 hours a night, who am I to say otherwise? You're dad. That's who you are. You're the guy that God put in charge of your family to lead your family and to hold those standards rather than noticing you're endangering the entire operation. You're endangering the entire family, and families are falling off a cliff in America because dads can't step up because it's toxic leadership. So yes, him taking a blowtorch to this was like,
finally, somebody
finally,
said it.
Finally. And that's not just in military. That's across the board. This is in church. This is in your home. This is in your workplace. Be the leader, the man of God that you need to be, where you step up and say the difficult things. And when somebody tries to get snarky with you and use these terms again, turn it right back around. You think I'm the toxic one because I'm the one trying to get everybody to live to and set a high standard? How toxic can you possibly be? Throw it back in their face. They don't have the moral high ground on this. So I don't know. Just ranting.
That's
at this point.
Rant.
But
I love it.
Man, this stuff drives me nuts. But man, good stuff.
My closing thoughts is just, I would encourage you in whatever position in life you're in. Again, if you're 15 and don't have a family, you can still apply these things to yourself, to your own life, maybe to your friend group or whatever it is. And obviously, the older you are, the more this stuff is going to apply. Rejecting toxic leadership, believing in the importance of culture, not lowering the standard, and then whatever the first one is that I need to roll back.
Confrontation.
Yeah, not being afraid of confrontation.
Needing confrontation, yep.
Needing it for peace. These are valuable, valuable principles that godly young men have to not just understand, but also believe. Like, you just have to. There's one of those things in these episodes that we've had. You know, there's certain things that are non-negotiables, and certain, you know, our reading episode we would say is a non-negotiable.
Sure.
But at the end of the day, it's not the end of the world. Being cultured is one that comes to mind. Did we do a travel etiquette?
I think
one?
We did a travel.
I don't think we have. We did some etiquette.
Oh man, that'd be a fun
restaurant
one.
Etiquette is one I know that we did. Okay, not the end of the world. Kind of negotiable. Stuff like this, that's pretty non-negotiable. Like, you just absolutely have to understand and believe some of this stuff. Otherwise, your family, your home life, whatever it is going to suffer. So, appreciate Pete Hegseth for giving us the content. Again, an awful endorsement of everything he said in that speech or whatever it is. But I feel like we have to give those qualifiers. But we wanted to talk about it because it does relate to godly young men, relates to masculinity, relates to, again, what we need to believe. So I hope you've enjoyed it. We would appreciate any thoughts that you have, either in the comments or on the Discord, if you are a member. Joe, any closing thoughts before we wrap up?
Go check out a speech, and we're going to do a travel. We have not. I just looked. We're going to do a travel etiquette one.
Oh, we need to.
Yeah, that'll be a fun one. But yes, go watch his speech if you get an opportunity. Really, really good stuff. That's exactly the type of tone we want to take of just, you know, it's powerful, and kind of gives you some goosebumps as you see him up there saying the things that, yes, we've been saying, but holding people to a standard. It's just a beautiful thing, and it's a good time to be a Christian. It's a good time to be an American. We're proud to be Americans. And again, to our military, thank you to everybody who's serving. Other than that, I think that's going to wrap us up. This has been episode
143
of the Godly Amen podcast. Thank you for listening. We will talk to you again next week.